Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Democracy-ish. I'm Danielle Moody.
And I'm Wajahat Ali.
And we are so excited to be joined on this episode by our good friend, author, podcaster, all-around badass Mary Trump, whose new book, her latest book, will drop on September 10th. So mark your calendars. And it is entitled, Who Could Ever Love You? A Family Memoir. Welcome, Waj. Do you want to do your movie phone introduction so you can Mary?
I just have to add one more movie phone tidbit. It goes, in addition to being the author of Who Could Ever Love You, a family memoir coming out in the fall, Mary Trump is the creator of the Mary Trump Substack that you have to join, and also the original creator of Mary Trump's Nerd Avengers that will be coming back soon.
Soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for
being good. That dramatic pause.
Love this.
I just had flashbacks to my misspent youth.
Was that spent in the movie theater? Like, was that?
Everyone else is like, oh man, I did cocaine. You're like, yeah man, did meth. Like, he's like, well, I used to go to the movie theater and spend the afternoon there.
Well, I was actually just thinking about this the other day. When Arthur came out, I don't think either of you was born yet.
Early 80s.
81, as a matter of fact. And it was right before I went off to boarding school. So that summer before school started, we saw Arthur like 700 times and we like memorized it. So we would, because we felt like everybody else in the audience would really appreciate it, we'd get really drunk and then talk along with the movie.
That sounds nice for everyone around.
They loved it.
Arthur sounds like such a great like a Trump movie, right? It's about this kind of like immature, spoiled billionaire given this immense wealth and privilege who's completely heedless, and but then like is well-intentioned and finds love and becomes good. It's like
that's the fork in the road.
Yeah.
I was gonna say like something
up
about
until
that.
Then,
up until it was... then, it seemed accurate. So Mary, here we are. Let me count the months. 8 months away from the November elections, and as the media would like to frame it, it is a rematch. Right? They want to reframe it as a rematch between Donald J. Trump and Joe Biden. And how Waj and I have been talking about it on this show is not in horse race terminology and regular punditry, but in the seriousness that this is, that it isn't your average rematch, right? That it is really about whether or not America, as we know it, as imperfect of a union as it is, survives for another 250 years. Whether it survives for another 8-9 months, frankly, at this point. And so we want to open up here with what is the media, as we know that they often do, getting wrong about how they are covering this election and how they've been covering it thus far?
Everything.
Yeah.
If we're talking about the corporate media are getting everything wrong. Mm-hmm. The headlines are about the rematch nobody wanted, despite the fact that tens of millions of people voted for each of these candidates. Despite the fact that, you know, typically when one party elects a president, they will vote for that person's reelection. And despite the fact that clearly for some obvious and some still inexplicable reasons, Donald Trump has been the head of the Republican Party for 8 years now. So, you know, this was an inevitable matchup. And for them to continue to focus on the horse race or to, I think one of the most egregious mistakes we're seeing is framing voters' concerns when what they're actually doing is telling voters what they're concerned about. You know, not putting it in terms of the real stakes here, which are the same stakes as we had in 2020, as you said, Danielle, democracy versus fascism, and it's fascism. We need to use that F word and not tiptoe around it. The difference, of course, now is that everybody knows it. It's not like things have gotten so much worse. Mm-hmm. The Republican Party has coalesced lock, stock, and barrel around this deeply dangerous, inept, incompetent, cruel criminal, essentially. There's no room for anybody else to be at the head of that party right now. And, you know, a lot of people I see on Twitter saying we're sleepwalking into fascism or sleepwalking into autocracy. No, we're being deliberately led there. Mm. And the corporate media have a lot to answer for that.
You know, I don't think it's just the corporate media. I would say it's our institutions that are leading us there, because we know what Trump is. I'm talking about Donald. You're the good one. We know what we've lived through it. Many of us have not lived through it. And the reason why I mentioned that is people kind of casually forget the pandemic, which killed over 1 million Americans, and the fact that he lied. And we have him on tape lying about the threat. This was in his interview with Bob Woodward, where even though he knew it was a threat, he lied and tried to force us to open up because he was afraid about his reelection. You know, told everyone to inject bleach. And you fast forward 8 years after violent insurrection, after four criminal cases in four different states, more than what now, 88 criminal indictments, you know, the threats of violence. And I say all this because here we are, and I still feel like, let's put proper context. I don't know. Let's give him maybe it's economic anxiety. What's going to happen? And you said something last week in a tweet, which, you know, you're like, what people are missing is, yes, Donald lost this $400+ million civil judgment in New York. He can't operate his business there. But you said the real story is if he lost $400 million and he's desperate for money, that means he's even a greater mark for foreign countries to come in and do quid pro quo. Can you expand on that thread? Because I still think people have forgotten what happened with Russia and are forgetting how vulnerable he is now and how vulnerable that makes us in national security if he wins again.
Yeah, it's such a great point, Waj. And it goes back to what you said initially. It's not just the corporate media. It's all of our institutions are failing us. None of our institutions seems to be, you could say they're not built for this moment, or you can say they're working exactly as designed. I would go with the latter, actually. But, you know, you see even presumably well-intentioned people not using the power at their disposal to make our institutions work, not just for us, for democracy, for this country. We see the failures of the judicial branch, which quite honestly...
Garland! What?
Don't Sorry. Do you Supreme really want to get me started? I don't think you do. Let me just put it really simply. If our democracy fails, it will be largely because of people we should have been able to count on to protect our democracy, not people like Donald Trump, not people like Mitch McConnell, who are doing exactly what they're supposed to do and what they've set out to do. I'm talking people like Garland and, you know, the Supreme Court, theoretically, although probably the most anti-democratic institution in American history. But it is shocking, though, that even Democrats, like, why has Donald's mishandling, and I use that word loosely, I think it was deliberate malfeasance of COVID not being investigated. I think he's directly responsible for the murder of hundreds of thousands of Americans. Why isn't Jared Kushner's ties to Saudi Arabia and that $2 billion like tip he got, which I think was, you know, for services rendered and for services to be rendered? Why isn't that being investigated? Why isn't there more of an uproar about what's happening with Ukraine funding and on and on and on? So all of those failures, institutional failures, failures to recognize, and which at this point is inexcusable, the threat facing us, does exactly what Donald needs. He needs the room to continue grifting and positioning himself in a particular way, to push the envelope, which is actually something he's quite good at. You know, he think about one thing he hasn't gotten away with. He basically, you know, I'm very thrilled that he was found liable for raping Agent Carol. I'm thrilled for her that she got the massive judgment she got or is going to get. What I'm not entirely sure how that was punishing him or serving as a deterrent to him. It probably wasn't his money, and I say this with horror. That verdict likely increased his street cred with his base. So, the fact that he is so vulnerable to foreign actors who do not have this country's best interests at heart should be enough to speed things up at least. And yet day after day, there's more delay. And in the case of Cannon in the Supreme Court, it's purposeful and it's meant to aid and abet him. And in other cases, it's because people continue to give him and the office he once held the benefit of the doubt, which he no longer deserves and never did, quite frankly.
You know, a little bit of breaking news as we're talking right now that I think aligns with E. Jean Carroll, which is that as of the time of this taping, Donald Trump is suing ABC and George Stephanopoulos for defamation in the interview that Nancy Mace had with George Stephanopoulos, I think roughly 2 weeks ago. And the funny thing about that is that, one, the case is going to get thrown out because there was no defamation, because what George Stephanopoulos offered was, Nancy Mace, how do you continue? You are a woman that has been a victim of sexual assault. How do you then go out on the stump for a man that was found criminally liable by a jury of his peers of sexual assault? And she tried to flip it and say, oh, you're shaming me. And he said, no, I'm not shaming you. I'm asking you a direct question. This man was found guilty in a court of law of sexual assault, and you stand with him. And so, you know, when we look at these things, and when you say, Mary, like, you know, it probably just upped his street cred with his base. I mean, you know, when Hillary Clinton referred to these people as baskets of deplorables, that was the nicest thing I think that we could possibly say about them. Because when I, you know, catch tidbits of interviews of some of his most ardent supporters, it is amazing to me that, like, their brains don't just ooze out of their ears, because there is seriously some corrosive, porous virus that has gotten hold. Because I don't, and you tell us, you know, I don't understand, and I am no longer talking to the 40% of Americans who are going to never be moved away from this man, right? I'm talking to the 60% that are left, right? That haven't just, you know, circled down the drain of hopelessness. But I wonder, like, if there is nothing that will move these people, what is it that awakens, enlivens, engages, or enrages the 60% that are left? From The New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham, a keenly observed novel of a young Black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about David's 18 months working for the senator's presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets a myriad of people who raise a set of questions. Questions of history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his own life anew and come to terms with his identity as a young Black man and father in America. Inspired by the author's experiences working on Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, Cunningham uses a political campaign as his narrative backbone. Great Expectations will be one of the talked about novels of the year, Colm McCann. Great Expectations is available wherever books are sold.
Well, there's so much that should be enraging them, that's for sure. But, you know, you just really astutely pointed to the larger problem here. It's not what Donald says at rallies and elsewhere. Is, of course, it's troubling and problematic and it needs to be highlighted. But it's the reactions of the people who are listening to him. It's not that Donald is filing yet another frivolous lawsuit. I think that's his raison d'être, quite honestly. It's that a woman who is a victim of sexual assault doesn't just defend a man who the judge said was found liable for rape. The judge himself used that word, so there's no defamation there. And it wasn't a judge who found that verdict. It was a jury of Donald's peers. And then she doesn't just defend Donald, but she flips it as if it were a vicious attack on rape victims, which is just shows you how far his party is willing to go for him. And then you mentioned the 40%. You know, back in 2020, when I was at before the election, when I was asked, you know, what do we do to persuade people not to vote for Donald? And I said, if they're planning to vote for him the second time, what the best strategy is to ignore them. And back then, I thought it was like 28%, but I do think the percentage has grown, which is really just devastating. But as for the rest of us, the 60% of us, I think Donald is helping. He's showing himself to be unhinged and quite just incapable of stringing a sentence together, and he's being shown in court to not to have the money he lied about having for decades and decades, which I think will help persuade some people. But beyond him, and you know, again, we need to point out how dangerous he and the Republican Party. It's not enough to get rid of Donald Trump,
right?
If he, like I, you know, if he were replaced by somebody else tomorrow, we'd have the same problem. Except that candidate would be less damaged, quite frankly. So we have to go over, unfortunately, this is what it's called now. We have to go after Trumpism, which means just putting the Republican Party in a hopefully permanent minority and changing our system so that the minority is the minority in how it functions, not just in terms of its numerical makeup, getting rid of the filibuster, getting rid of gerrymandering, it's all that, getting rid of the Electoral College, right? That's how you make this, give us a shot at becoming a democracy. But, you know, I think, and we've talked about this before, it isn't enough to make people angry and scared. That's all the Republicans do. obviously it's very effective, but they are appealing to a very different kind of voter. They are appealing to people who have authoritarian personalities, who need a strong leader, who think that that's going to work out well for them. They're appealing to people who care more that people they hate do worse than they do, mm-hmm. than they care mm-hmm. about their own selves doing well, right? We need hope on our side too. Mm. We need to explain to people in the most explicit and real way what we can accomplish if we win, but if we get the majorities that are necessary in order to affect real change. Because this, otherwise we're just fighting our rear guard constantly. It's always going to be democracy versus fascism. Democracy is going to get weaker and weaker.
Yep.
And, you know, that's not much of a future. We need to let people know that what we're going to do or what the Democrats are going to do with real power. And that hopefully will be reimagining everything from the ground up.
You know, I want to talk about what Biden and Democrats have to do. But before we get into that, I think it does reveal something about America, which people are uncomfortable acknowledging, is that it's not just a few of us. You know, this disease, this virus of white supremacy and cruelty is part and parcel of the American experiment. And mm-hmm. because Donald Trump, after all this, has increased some voters when it comes to Latinos, when it comes to Muslims, when it comes to Black folks, you know, thanks to disinformation, thanks to, I would say, even he appeals to something, this anti-progress bug in many of us, which is like, oh, women are getting too much. They got to go back in the kitchen. Gays are flexing
you,
too
Katie
much.
Britt.
Go back to the closet. Immigrants and people of color are replacing my daddy in the boardroom. And I saw this movie recently, which is an excellent movie called Zone of Interest, which won at the Academy Awards and, you know, some brouhaha because Jonathan Glazer was the only person at the podium to mention what's happening in Israel and Palestine. It was very empathetic to both sides, and now he's being banned. But the whole movie, for those who haven't seen, is about complicity. And it's about complicity during genocide and about dehumanization. And the movie, for those who haven't seen, is you never see what's happening in Auschwitz. You just hear it throughout the entire movie. And literally right next door, it's the commander. It's a Nazi commander who's overrunning the death camps, living the most idyllic life. And the whole movie is about what happens to both the perpetrator, the majority, and how they get dehumanized and how they're able to live out this idyllic life literally while there is a genocide. And the Jonathan Glazer talked about, you know, what's happening right now all around the world. And I thought about the complicity aspect of it, Mary, because mm-hmm. last week I just sat there and like, I wanted to like bang my head against the wall because last week Trump did one of these unhinged rallies. He starts off the rally praising the January 6th insurrectionist, yep. not making this up.
After playing their anthem,
the anthem, and then there was a choir, the January 6th choir, and in this talk, he also said that some undocumented immigrants aren't human. He said there will never be another election if he's not he doesn't win this one, and then he does his random verbal diarrhea about the auto industry, and then he pivots to bloodbath for the whole country, then pivots back. And all these folks who I think are smarter, who I gave them credit, benefit of the doubt, were like, oh, come on now, liberals. Come on now, don't be unfair. Put the proper context. It was about the auto industry. And then for 2 days, MAGA tried its best to spin and attack the rest of us who put it in the right context, that this is the man who threatens, casually warns about jokes about violence, and mainstream individuals who know better were like, came after me, came after you, Mary, and they're like, come on now, he doesn't mean that, even though this mother effer started that rally praising the January 6th violent insurrectionist. How do we come out of this complicity? And what is, and another thing I'll say, Mary, because your first book was about, you know, I think your first two books were about America's history of complicity, like genocide, in torture, and mm-hmm. slavery. Maybe this is us. Maybe this is 30, 40% of us. This is who we are. Thank you for my rant.
No, it's great. It's a great rant. I love your rants. You know that. One of years and years ago, I read Eric Foner's book about one of his many books about restoration, the Restoration. And because, you know, I'm not a historian, you know, at a great American history teacher in high school, but it was sort of like the history of America by battle kind of thing. So, you know, there's a lot I didn't know and a lot of ways in which I didn't think about our history. And obviously the promise of restoration was betrayed. But in reading that book, he made me think about, okay, what would this country have been like today if Black Americans had continued to have the electoral power they had for that very, very brief window of time? So I, you know, that to me is one of this country's greatest tragedies. The other thing that people forget about, and I think part of it is because, you know, World War II happened around this time. During that 100 years of Jim Crow, what I should say is there's 100 years of Jim Crow, and then World War II kind of helped America change the subject in terms of its the way the world viewed us. The American South was a closed fascist state. I mean, you know, like, you don't just get over that without addressing it. And that was the point of my second book. We haven't addressed it. So how do you atone for something if you don't talk about it? And that's obviously why there's this huge push on the right, because they realize this is their last chance. This election, it's not our last chance to affect change. It's the last election we need to win in order to affect change. If they lose, they lose forever, or at least, you know, they should. That explains a lot of the urgency on the right to erase our history and to make everything so white, male, Christian centric. I completely forgot the other question. I'm so sorry.
No, because I gave you a lot. It was about, complicity and what does it say about us?
Think about this. This guy, Donald Trump, has replaced the national anthem with an anthem in honor of traitors to this country. Mm-hmm. Using the word traitors loosely, not accurately. Whereas Colin Kaepernick, in quiet, respectful protest, knelt during the national anthem and had his career destroyed. Donald Trump is the de facto leader of the Republican Party. Well, actually, he's the real leader now that he's the presumptive nominee for the presidential race. Is allowed to do these things. He's allowed to call other human beings vermin. And trust me, we've seen it already. That definition is expanding. If he wins, that definition is going to include, like, all of us are already included in that definition because of race, ethnicity, or sexual orientation. But that definition is going to include anybody who doesn't like Donald.
Yep.
You know, anybody who voted against him, anybody who spoke against him, any Democrat, anybody in a blue state, what have you. So the complicity is a function of the normalization, or I should say is the result of the normalization. If any article talks about Donald as a candidate without mentioning that he's a rapist, that he is facing 4 indictments for stealing highly sensitive government documents, trying to steal the election, that he is largely responsible for the insurrection of January 6th. It's on and on and on and on. Then he's being normalized. Mm-hmm. And time after time, it's Biden's old. Okay, the Democrats need to get rid of Biden. Mm-hmm. Okay, no, I never have seen one article about the Republicans needing to get rid of Donald.
No.
And I'm going to guess that's because they're making the assumption that Donald isn't going to choose a black woman to be vice president. I could be wrong.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Well, to be honest, Waj, my social battery is not very high. It is actually probably running on low, and I need to plug myself in. For me, it does take a bit of working myself up. So, you know what? Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life, to build back, I'll say, a social life that doesn't drain your battery.
Yeah, you know, speaking about being drained, and as I've shared, you know, I have OCD and so does my father. You're constantly drained, right? What I found is with therapy, you can get a partner who will listen and then, you know, show you the blind spots of what you might be doing wrong and just help you.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/democracy today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/democracy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, where we find ourselves is in a different place than 2020, even though people want to say that this is the, you know, a rematch. I think we are in a different place than 2016, a different place in 2020. I think that Donald Trump is more dangerous than he was in either of those previous campaigns. I think the Republican Party is more dangerous and emboldened than it was in either of those two prior races. And I think that what we are facing is indeed an existential threat. I don't think that Republicans go away if Biden is able to win, but I think that their power and their cult of personality is greatly diminished if Donald Trump loses and loses resoundedly. So the last question for you, Mary, is, you know, do you think it's possible, right? Do you think it's possible that that Biden wins, that we win, that America wins? Because the matchup that this is isn't Biden versus Trump. It is America versus Trump. Can America win?
It has to. I'll put it like that. I just want to say really quickly, it's not only a different race. These are different candidates. You're absolutely right. Donald is more dangerous. And Biden is a much better candidate than he was in 2020. In 2020, he was, you know, not Donald. He has a track record now. And yes, there are lots of things we can, many conversations to have about how certain things are being handled, et cetera, but in terms of the domestic stuff and the economy and COVID and what have you, I mean, there's just no comparison between these two people. And I have to believe that as we go forward and they're more directly competing against each other, we're going to see a shift. And I think you're absolutely right, Danielle, that this has to be seen as an existential battle for the soul of America. I mean, will after 200 and whatever years, the American experiment finally fail? And are we going to let it fail at the hands of a just a corrupt loser like Donald Trump? I mean, is that really how we want to go out? Mm-hmm. And also, I think helping people understand that the stakes go far beyond our country. The Western alliance, gone. Yeah. America will align itself with the most vicious, despicable, crazy dictators on the planet, from Putin to Kim Jong-un,
Orban,
Duterte, et cetera. So, you know, I think there's plenty of time to help people, you know, to expand people's sense of really what is at stake, and to drill into people's heads that this is not a choice between two men. This is a choice between who we are, who we want to be, and how many people we're willing to allow to suffer horribly if we fail.
Thank you, our good friend Mary, for putting the punctuation on what is at stake. Thank you for listening to Democracy-ish. I'm Danielle Moody.
And I'm Wajahat Ali.
And we will be back next week, if in fact we have a country left. Inshallah.